What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic today, taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Marquise Munson also alongside here today. Vingan, what's going on, man?
It's weird. You're not here.
I know.
And
Marquise, social distancing.
And Marquise and I are separated by a door and a pane of glass, so we are social distancing to the max here at the 102.5 The Game studios.
Then again, how does it feel to be officially old?
I guess your definition of old is anybody over the age of 30.
Yeah, I guess so.
You'll be there one day, kid. So
hopefully.
Don't pretend. Yes. In these uncertain times, we can never know. But I'm confident you'll be there one day. It feels the same.
What did you do for your birthday while you were having to social distance? For those of you who miss it, Adam had a birthday yesterday.
Yes.
So an interesting time to have a birthday nowadays.
Indeed. Not a whole lot, to be honest. We continued to social distance. My wife and I had 312 Pizza Kitchen, supporting local businesses, had some deep dish takeout for my birthday. I didn't have a cake because most of the places that supply cake are closed.
That is true.
Bridget put a candle with a number 3 and a candle with a number 1 in the middle of the pizza. Lit the candles. It's on my Twitter if you want to see it. Made a wish and had some pizza. So it was a pretty laid back day. I feel as though even with the current pandemic that we're dealing with, that as you get older, birthdays lose their meaning a little bit.
Yeah.
Even if there wasn't a pandemic that was forcing us to stay inside, I don't think my birthday would have been a bash of any kind. I think I probably would have kept things lighthearted as I did yesterday.
What's your favorite birthday of all time? I think mine was when I was 6. We went to Grand Ole Golf in Opryland. It was awesome.
Is that where you and I and Porth went golfing that one time?
Yeah, it is. Go-karts over there and everything.
Yes, awesome. My favorite birthday. That's a good question. I'm not sure if I have a specific birthday, but I just remember birthdays based on what my friends all wanted to do, because there was a stretch of time when I was in elementary school where every birthday party was at Discovery Zone. Those of you who are not familiar with Discovery Zone, it's basically like an indoor gym kind of place with the ball pits and the slides and stuff like that. And then as we got a little bit older, we started transitioning into middle school. It was all laser tag. So I kind of remember birthdays based on where did everybody have their birthday. So when I was in elementary school, everybody had it at Discovery Zone. When I was in middle school, everybody had it at Ultra Zone. It was called laser tag. So I don't know. I did like the laser tag parties. So in the middle school range, I think was pretty good.
Munson, where was your favorite birthday that you ever had? What did you do?
All my birthdays have been pretty chill. Like I think I had a pool party when I was like 8, but I couldn't really swim, so I just was chilling.
That's right.
So I was just chilling in a hammock or something.
That's what most people do now who sit by a pool. Have you ever noticed that people who sit by pools actually never go in the pool?
Exactly. So I kind of set the trend for people who just don't swim in the pool and just kind of stand there and try to look cute at 8 years old when I was eating cake. That's all I did. Like that's one that I remember most. 21st birthday was pretty cool. 23rd birthday was
my 21st.
Fantastic.
My 21st birthday, I was studying abroad it was my junior year in college. I was studying abroad in London. So I had my 21st birthday in London, which sort of defeated the purpose of having, a 21st birthday, because the legal drinking age in England is 18. But I just remember a bunch of us went to the pub that was near our dorm building and just sat there for a few hours and nursed some beer and some cider, and it was great. But yes, having your birthday abroad, when having your 21st birthday abroad as an American, where you're in a country where you were able to drink already, sort of defeated the purpose, but it was still very fun.
Yeah, Robbie's asking me that question like I'm supposed to tell him like those extravagant birthdays that I had that I can't share stories about on air. So, yeah.
Look, I was just seeing how ready you were for the show this morning. I was going to see how far you were willing to go to push the envelope.
Well, you saw yesterday that in Kentucky, there apparently was someone who tested positive for coronavirus because they attended a coronavirus party. I believe that was what the governor of Kentucky said.
I did not see that. Is that a real thing?
I guess so. I likened it to when we were younger and our parents made us go play with kids that had chicken pox so that we would catch chicken pox.
Oh, my God.
Except that, you know, you don't want to catch coronavirus. So, but the most important thing that happened yesterday – well, this is – I'm being facetious when I say this. But the most important thing that happened yesterday is you might remember the viral clip of the kids partying at spring break, including one young man who said,
"Oh yeah,
if I get corona, I get corona. I'm not going to allow it to you know, stop me from having a good time." He issued an apology yesterday on social media. So,
well, I would imagine so.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all realized how serious this actually is. And look, we get it. You know, we were all 18, 19, 21 years old at one point in our lives, and we didn't have a care in the world at that point, and we've all grown up and matured, or at least most of us have grown up and matured since then, and I think have developed a new perspective on this thing. So hopefully we'll continue to battle. I saw Carl Anthony Towns. He let out a really emotional message last night, basically saying his mom is on a ventilator right now and is in a coma after contracting coronavirus. So very real-life effects on a lot of people throughout the country now, and unfortunately right now it seems to be growing pretty rapidly. So everyone continue to practice our social distancing, and we can get a hold on this thing hopefully sooner rather than later. Adam, some big NFL news yesterday. The Panthers released quarterback Cam Newton. And, you know, it came out last week that they were looking to maybe trade him. Him and they said that he and the team had come to, like, a mutual decision to seek a trade. Of course, Cam Newton said, you know what, don't paint it like that. Like, I wanted this. I didn't want this. He's been dealing with injuries. There's been a whole lot of things going on with Cam Newton. I was surprised that at the end of the day, it ended up getting down to, you know what, we're not going to be able to work out a trade. We're just going to have to go ahead and release him, especially since the day before they traded Kyle Allen to the Redskins and got a fifth-round pick back for him. So that just kind of goes to show, I think, where the value is for Cam Newton right now. I think a lot of people around the league are concerned about his injuries and the history that he's had. And I do wonder, like, what does that mean? What does that say about the value that Cam Newton has in the league right now? And I don't, you know, does he end up having a starting job this season at some point around the league? I think there's a lot in doubt about Cam Newton's future right now.
I think the one thing working against Cam Newton is the fact that teams can't bring him in to give him a physical. You know, that's why Kyle Allen, who was their starter last year, was able to fetch a fifth round pick from Washington. Of course, now going to play for his former/current coach, Ron Rivera in Washington. I really do think the fact that, you know, although Cam, you know, is posting all of these hyped up Instagram videos of him exercising, that's not enough to go on if you're a team looking to sign him. So I really do think that's what worked against him. If I were an NFL general manager, I wouldn't sign Cam Newton unless I had him in my building and had my doctors and trainers look at him. And of course, he was the MVP in 2015, and this is from ESPN Stats and Information. In 2015, he was 15-1. Since, he's 23-23. Now, he has been dealing with significant injuries since his 2015 MVP season, and the Panthers have not been as good, but that's a significant drop-off in the quality of play from Cam Newton. But he does provide an interesting option on the quarterback market, and it's hard to figure out where he might go. I thought, for example, he might go to Washington because of his relationship with Ron Rivera, but they ended up going with Kyle Allen. The Chicago Bears acquired Nick Foles, so Jacksonville is all aboard the Gardner Minshew train, does Cam Newton consider going to Jacksonville? Does he go to New England to replace Tom Brady? There are a lot of intriguing options out there, but it's hard to pinpoint exactly where I think the best fit is for Cam Newton just because there's so many unknowns about his health and because of the situation we're in in the world. I was going to say as a nation, but also around the world. Teams can't bring him in to work him out, and there's too much risk involved with a player who has a track record of significant injury over the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Like, when you're trying to figure out where he's going to end up, like you said, Adam, I mean, you look around the league, and to be honest with you, I think New England makes the most sense because Joe and I were talking about this yesterday. Do you really feel comfortable going with Jared Stidham right now if you're Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots? I think Cam Newton in New England would be intriguing. I think Bill Belichick and him would be a fascinating kind of a relationship to watch develop. Because I think Cam Newton has got some fire to him right now. I think, you know, he's eager to prove that he still has a lot left to give. And it's, I mean, he's only 30 years old. You take a look at him right now. He's still, just from a pure age standpoint, you would think has a lot left to give at the NFL level. The problem is the beating that he's taken. I mean, he's 6'5", about 250 as a quarterback. So it's almost like the LeBron thing in the NBA. He's so big and so powerful that a lot of times I think when LeBron is driving to the lane, maybe he doesn't get some of the calls that other players in the league would get. I think it's a similar thing with Cam Newton at the quarterback position. He's so big and so hard to bring down that I think sometimes he takes some unnecessary shots that probably would be called on other quarterbacks throughout the league that just because of how big he is, they don't get called.
Yeah, that is a good point. And ESPN did a roundtable of sorts after Cam was released, and the first question is which team should try to sign Newton? And there are a few teams that get mentioned more than once. The Los Angeles Chargers came up on more than one occasion. The Buffalo Bills came up once. The Patriots, and even Jacksonville. The LA Chargers are interesting because apparently they're confident enough, at least based on what I've seen, in going with Tyrod Taylor, which I don't think is the smartest decision, because, you know, Tyrod Taylor has had opportunities to start in the NFL, but he's more or less a backup at this point. I mean, perhaps they go and draft somebody at quarterback, but, you know, the Chargers have some weapons. They have Keenan Allen. They have Austin Eckler. They have Hunter Henry. It might be a good fit, and it could be a shot in the arm to a team that honestly, you know, the Los Angeles market has been, I think, hit and miss with the NFL. I think the Rams have, you know, had much more success, obviously, and therefore have had more fan support. The Chargers have been lagging behind significantly. So perhaps acquiring Cam Newton, a MVP 5 years ago, might be something that inspires what fan base they do have in Los Angeles. The Chargers actually seem to be a good fit on paper. And I, as I mentioned, I think Jacksonville would be interesting too, just because, you know, Minshew was fine as the quarterback last year. Obviously, a lot of interest in him. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah,
I think he's a I think he proved that he could be a solid quarterback. I'm not sure if he's a full-time starter. So perhaps Cam going to Jacksonville would be a good spot. And then, of course, the Titans would see him twice a year, which would be interesting too.
When we come back, Mel Kiper has dropped another big board projecting this year's NFL draft. What does he have the Titans selecting? Where could quarterback Jordan Love end up? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Adam, Mel Kiper has come out with another big board that he's dropped projecting what teams may do in the 2020 NFL draft. And he's got the New England Patriots selecting Jordan Love at the quarterback position. Obviously, right now, the quarterback position very much in doubt in terms of which direction the Patriots are going to go in the future. Right now, Jared Stidham appears to be the guy. They've signed Brian Hoyer as well. If you select Jordan Love in the first round, like, does that give you pause to start in the first year? Do you go with Stidham at that point? I think it's an interesting decision the Patriots have at that point, if indeed they end up selecting Jordan Love in the first round. There's so much pressure nowadays that if you draft a rookie quarterback, he's got to play immediately. I don't really anticipate Bill Belichick being a guy that falls into that pressure. I would anticipate, even if they do draft Jordan Love this year, maybe he sits behind Jared Stidham for a little bit. You at least see what you have in Stidham. And then at some point, if you have to make the move and go with Jordan Love at that point, then you would do it. That's just the way I think Bill Belichick would operate.
Hey, don't count out Brian Hoyer, okay?
Yeah, man. Brian Hoyer.
They reacquired Brian Hoyer after he was released by the Indianapolis Colts. So back in the fold, Brian Hoyer, a veteran quarterback. So perhaps Jared Stidham and possibly Jordan Love sit behind Brian Hoyer. Now, I'm being incredibly facetious when I say that. But it's interesting because if Jordan Love is drafted by the New England Patriots, it's not as if though he is sitting behind a veteran player. He's sitting behind a basically another rookie, someone who's never had any meaningful snaps at the NFL level. So, you know, I agree with the idea that, you know, you drafted Jared Stidham, so perhaps you give him the opportunity to prove himself before you hand over the reins possibly to Jordan Love. But it makes sense. I mean, two seasons ago, Jordan Love was fantastic. He had 32 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions, according to Mel Kiper. Last year, he had 20 touchdown passes and 17 interceptions, but I believe the talent level that he was working with dropped off significantly year over year. But it would make sense. You know, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Cam Newton. Do the New England Patriots decide to go young at the quarterback position, or with the number of veteran quarterbacks that are on the free agent market, whether it be Cam Newton or Joe Flacco or Jameis Winston, you know, as a failsafe in that situation. But certainly there are options for the Patriots at quarterback at, you know, they're picking 23 in the draft. So there will be opportunities to get a solid quarterback there. But I'd be curious to see which way they go in that regard, whether or not they feel that, you know, they can draft someone like Love and have him there sitting behind another green quarterback in Stidham, or if they try to get a veteran with significantly more starting experience.
And Mel Kiper also has the Titans selecting an offensive tackle in the first round. And it's interesting, Adam, to kind of evaluate how we think John Robinson and the Titans are going to approach the draft this year, because there's still, I think, maybe some information that we don't have. Maybe they do end up pursuing Jadeveon Clowney and are able to sign him. Maybe Logan Ryan comes back. How would those moves impact the way that John Robinson views the draft coming up? Obviously, Jack Conklin leaving, Dennis Kelly as the projected starter right now at right tackle. That's going to be a need. Is that the need in the first round? Trevor Maddich joined Jared and the GM yesterday and talked about that one offensive tackle he think the Titans may target in the first round. Here's what Trevor Maddich had to say.
The guy I think they could target if they really are looking for a tackle in the first round is a kid out of USC named Austin Jackson. Mm-hmm. Jackson's really young. He's only 20 years old. And he missed the season to injury. And before the 2019 season, in the summer, he donated bone marrow to his sister. And I've never done that, but I'm told by people who have that it can be a really nasty physical recovery for the donor. And so he did that for his sister. And then came out and played the season, started all 13 games for USC in last season. So I think he's a guy that even though he's young, and he needs to get stronger. So he also needs to get stronger. But he's got the athletic ability to do all the second-level stuff that they need him to do. And with a little bit more core strength and a little bit more hip strength, I think he'll be good enough to be able to get push at the line of scrimmage. But more than that, he'll be able to pass protect really well.
Yeah, so that's an interesting option that Trevor Maddich throws out there for the Titans at the offensive tackle position. Austin Jackson, as Trevor said, 20 years old, 6'6", 310 pounds. I think, to his point, he'd have to get stronger at that position. But regardless of who the specific lineman would be that they would take at the draft, I think offensive tackle, now that you've lost Jack Conklin, I think you feel okay about Dennis Kelly at that position, but it's going to be a need for the Titans at some point in the draft. I think there's a really good chance that the 29th overall pick in the first round, that may be the route the Titans go at the offensive tackle position.
Yeah, and Mel Kiper has the Titans taking an offensive tackle at number 29, Ezra Cleveland out of Boise State, who I believe is the same has the same height and weight as Austin Jackson. The it's 6'6", 310 pounds. The most interesting thing to me by reading this blurb from Mel Kiper is that Cleveland ran a 4.93 40, third fastest among offensive linemen. I'm just impressed that a 310-pound man can run a 40 in less than 5 seconds.
That's pretty scary.
That is pretty scary. You know, I certainly can't run a 40 anywhere near 4.93 seconds, and I'm about half his size. It does make sense because, you know, Dennis Kelly has proven to be a really important, you know, depth player at times for the Tennessee Titans. And I think if you are John Robinson, you can be confident in your offensive line if Dennis Kelly is replacing Jack Conklin. But it might be beneficial to them to draft another offensive tackle and have that person compete with Dennis Kelly for that spot, just to give you more options. And the other thing you have to consider is, you know, do the Titans think about drafting someone in the secondary with that pick, you know, to replace, you know, Logan Ryan? You know, I was listening to Darren Donick and Chase yesterday, and I believe they were discussing the possibility of maybe taking a running back in the first round in case you want some insurance for Derrick Henry. So I'm curious which way the Titans go, but I think the safest bet is an offensive tackle, just because you can bring somebody fresh and young in to compete with Dennis Kelly. And if Dennis Kelly wins the job, then great. But then you don't have to rest your laurels on Dennis Kelly replacing Jack Conklin, which may be easier said than done.
And the other part of this discussion is, now that the Titans have lost Jarrell Casey on the line, they've signed Vic Beasley. You feel, I think, kind of up in the air about that one. You don't know what's going to happen. Do they get Jadeveon Clowney? Do they not get Jadeveon Clowney? What happens at that position if you end up not getting Clowney at that point? It's possible you have to go and address your pass rush at the 29th overall pick as well. Trevor Maddich talked about that as well on Jared and the GM, and the impact of getting maybe a big-time pass rusher at the 29th overall position. Here's what Maddich had to say about that.
I think they've got a better chance at 29 to go with D-line than really any other position to have someone that will make an impact, especially without Casey. And there'll be some guys that are there that can do some stuff. And I think disruption is what they really need. You can rotate guys in to have bodies to eat up blockers and then rotate them out. But at some point, you need a guy that can make a play. And there are guys that can do that. Now, once again, at 29, the guys that are the best risks, like Derek Brown of Auburn and Javon Kinlaw of South Carolina, those guys that are really complete players, they're going to be long gone. But there's guys with the potential to be extremely disruptive if you are if you're willing to take the risk that they will accept the coaching and be able to improve.
And that's the risk you take, I think, if you're the Titans at that point. And I was talking to Floyd Reese right around the beginning of the offseason, right after the Titans season came to an end against Kansas City. And we were just saying, you know, sometimes it's really difficult to project ahead when it comes to the pass rush. We saw how much of an impact Javon Kurse had on the Titans when he came here back in 1999. I mean, the Titans had been an 8-8 team for years. You get Javon Kurse, and all of a sudden you turn around and they're 13-3 and going to the Super Bowl. So that's kind of the impact that getting that significant pass rusher can have on your team. But sometimes, Adam, it's so hard to project whether or not a pass rusher is going to be effective jumping from the college game to the NFL game. And if the Titans decide to go that route at 29, that's going to be the biggest challenge for John Robinson and the scouting staff with the Titans. You have to make sure you feel really confident in that pick, because that's a big risk at the 29th overall position. Like, if you're getting Chase Young out of Ohio State, you feel pretty good about it. Like, you're pretty confident that's going to work. If not, that's a risk after that.
Yeah, my colleague at The Athletic, Shiel Kapadia, had a story yesterday entitled Predicting Where the 33 Best Remaining NFL Free Agents Will Land. Number one on the list, Jadeveon Clowney signs with the Tennessee Titans, according to Shiel. And he writes, they signed edge rusher Vic Beasley to a one-year deal but could still use enforcements in the front seven. Clowney's skills are best maximized in a creative defensive scheme in which he can line up in different spots and create havoc. the Titans offer that. Plus, Mike Vrabel is familiar with Clowney from their time together in Houston. Now, of course, a lot was made of the fact that Mike Vrabel and Tom Brady were buds. They were former teammates, and that sort of played into the Tom Brady to Tennessee hoopla that we were talking about for several weeks. But you know, this is a little bit different because Vrabel coached Jadeveon Clowney with the Houston Texans. So you might, you know, in that situation between potentially picking a defensive end late in the first round where you're not exactly sure what you're going to get. And that isn't to say the same thing about Clowney. I mean, you also don't know what you're going to get with Jadeveon Clowney, even though he was, you know, he was the number one pick in the draft, correct?
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, an ex number one pick in the NFL draft, but his career has been up and down as well. So if you're John Robinson, do you take the risk on drafting someone late in the first round on defensive end that, you know, offers a bit of mystery? Or do you take someone who's been in the league for several years and continues to offer a bit of mystery in Jadeveon Clowney? It's a really interesting question because, at least with Clowney, he's been in the league. He has tape on him in the NFL. But, you know, he's going to be significantly more expensive, and you don't know what you're getting. So it does present an interesting conundrum, perhaps, for the Titans when it comes to that.
When we come back, we'll get Adam's thoughts on the Preds signing of Connor Ingram, and what does that mean for the goaltending position as we move forward here. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan from The Athletic. And Adam, the Predators announced a couple days ago they have signed Connor Ingram to a three-year contract. Was having a great year in Milwaukee with the Admirals. I think it was 21-5-5 on the year, and was just playing really well. I mean, that whole team in general was the best team in the American Hockey League, playing really well all season long, and Connor Ingram in goal has been a huge part of that. Adam, you've been up to Milwaukee. You've talked with Connor Ingram. What did you make of the Predators signing and just kind of the year that Ingram has had so far?
I thought it was a really solid signing for the Predators. And as you mentioned, Connor Ingram, 21-5-5 this season, his 1.92 goals against average and .933 save percentage each are third among qualified goaltenders, or were third among qualified goaltenders in the American Hockey League. And you're right. In early February, I went up to Milwaukee to catch up with the team, and I talked to Connor Ingram. And we know that his departure from the Tampa Bay Lightning was a bit messy. He talked to me about how there was just a different atmosphere in the Predators organization than the Lightning organization, at least for him, in terms of how people are treated and how people from different walks of life and different lifestyles are treated. He seemed to be in a better place. One other thing that I think was working very well for him in Milwaukee this season is that before the season was paused, the Milwaukee Admirals They rotated their goaltender every other game. Yeah. Ingram started a game, then Troy Grosnick started a game, then Ingram, then Grosnick, and so on. So there was never an issue or a concern from Ingram about when he was going to play, which I think was part of the reason for his messy split from the Tampa Bay Lightning, was because of a lack of direction in terms of how much playing time he was receiving in the minor leagues. But He's been really good, and when you look at the Predators' goaltending situation, before the season paused, UC Saros had started 15 of the Predators', I guess you could say, final 21 games. He had effectively replaced Pecorine as the Predators' number one goaltender, and when you look at some of the analytics since John Hines took over in early January, UC Saros had been one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. So we're getting to a point where there is going to be an even further transition in that there already seems to be one happening. But you know, Pecorine has 1 year remaining on his contract, and if we assume that he plays out that year and then retires, you do have someone in Connor Ingram who's basically going to be making league minimum at the NHL level behind UC Saros. presumably. I mean, that is a intriguing tandem. You know, both are young men. Saros has proven in the second half of the season that he can stand up to the rigors of being a starting goaltender in the NHL. Ingram has shown at the American League level how talented he is. So I think when you sign Connor Ingram to that contract, if you're the Predators, I think you're confident in what he has shown, and you hope that he continues to grow. If you assume he stays in the American League again next year and continues to develop. So if Pekka-Rinne retires in 2021, you have, in my opinion, a very solid tandem in UC Saros and Connor Ingram that's full of potential.
I think so, and it's kind of amazing to see where the Predators' goaltending situation is now compared to where it was, I think, before the season started, because, you know, we've always known that, you know, it's UC and Pekka here in Nashville, and we figured it's going to be that way until Pekka retires. But you looked in the organization, there wasn't a ton of depth after that, and I think Connor Ingram has put them in a position now where you feel pretty good about the future moving forward here. You know, at some point, Rinne is going to retire. I mean, his contract, I think he's got 1 year left on his contract.
Yes, next
after
season.
This year.
Yep.
After that, I mean, there's a good chance he's going to retire after that, and you have to be able, if you're the Predators, to look ahead and say, okay, now that, you know, we've had this guy here full-time really since like 2008, what do we do about this position as we move forward? I think everybody feels good that UC Saros is going to be the guy as the starting goaltender for the foreseeable future, but it's nice to have somebody like Connor Ingram in your system that at least can put some back pressure on UC Saros. And I think, look, if Ingram continues to trend in the direction he's trending right now, I mean, he's going to make a case for a lot of playing time once he gets here.
I think so. And, you know, you think about the goaltending prospects that the Predators have had over the past, you know, decade or so, and you haven't really needed someone necessarily because Pekka-Rinne has been the unquestioned number one goaltender for more than a decade. But you look at someone like Marek Mazanich, for example, his career flamed out. You know, UC Saros has proven to be, you know, a very valuable part of the Predators. And then you look at some of the players that, you know, some of the other goaltenders like Carter Hutton, you know, a journeyman goaltender who backed up Pekka-Rinne for, I believe, 3 seasons before moving on to St. Louis and then to Buffalo. So having Connor Ingram, a young man in the fold who's playing well, and then you have UC Saros, who I believe is only 24. You have two very young goaltenders after having one of the oldest in the NHL. So I think that if you are the Predators, like I said before, you have to be encouraged by how well Connor Ingram has played in the American League, helping the Milwaukee Admirals have the best record in that league before the season was suspended. And you hope that next year when it returns, when the hockey returns, hopefully, that he continues on that progression so that when he comes in, presumably for the 2021-22 season, you have somebody in line that can push UC Saros for playing time, and you can have one of the younger, better tandems in the NHL.
Adam, Joe and I talked about this yesterday, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well. You know, we compare like the goaltending position and the quarterback position in football a lot just because of the importance they have. You know, the quarterback's the most important position in the NFL. The goaltending position is the most important position in the NHL. But as like just viewing it from a purely a draft standpoint, they're viewed totally differently. I mean, there are quarterbacks taken left and right in the first round of the NFL draft. That doesn't really work that way with the goaltending position in the NHL. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think there's not more of a premium put on the goaltending position in the NHL draft?
That's a good question. Just because you're right. You don't see goaltenders taken high in the draft very often. I'm trying to look at my draft finder now on Hockey Reference to see, you know, the last goaltender selected number one, you know, selected number, you know, in the first round, excuse me. Spencer, it was actually last year, Spencer Knight was selected by the Florida Panthers. And you look at some of the other goaltenders that have been drafted in the first round. You know, you famously have someone like Marc-Andre Fleury, who was drafted number one overall by the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2003. I mean, there are players on this list that have had very productive careers. Carey Price was number five overall in 2005 for the Montreal Canadiens. Tuukka Rask was 21st for the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, now with the Boston Bruins. And then there are some misses on there, for sure. The Predators can speak to that. In 2008, they drafted Chet Pickard with the 18th pick, and he never played an NHL game. You know, that's a really good question. I would be very curious to see why exactly that is. But just looking at looking at the discrepancy and how often those players are picked. You know, before Spencer Knight was picked number 13 by the Panthers last year, you have to go back to 2017. The Dallas Stars at number 26 picked Jake Oettinger. Before that, in 2015, at number 22, the Washington Capitals selected Ilya Samsonov, who is now their backup goaltender and potentially their goaltender of the future, depending on what happens with Braden Holtby. Malcolm Subban was a first-round draft pick in 2012 of the Boston Bruins. Andrei Vasilevsky, also in 2012, who, of course, is now the starter for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So there, you do have success, but I also think there is significant risk, as the Predators learned in that first round in 2008, picking Chet Pickard. I don't have the answer, but it is something that is worth thinking about.
Yeah, I think we had Chris Mason on yesterday, and he was just talking about maybe it's just as simple as the development of a goaltender. It takes longer. Maybe that's a big part of why they're drafted where they're drafted. I mean, even a guy like Carter Hart, who has been basically a can't-miss prospect for his entire life, he was drafted in the second round in 2016, 48th overall. That was the first goalie selected that year, 48th overall in the draft. So it is interesting to see just how differently the position is viewed, in that premium position in the NHL when compared to the NFL. When we come back, did Roman Josi do enough this season to persuade voters to give him the Norris Trophy? Has he done enough to overcome John Carlson of the Washington Capitals? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Adam, you and your cohorts at The Athletic came out with some postseason NHL awards the other day of the 2019-2020 NHL season. And obviously the one that stands out the most, if you're a Predators fan, is the vote on the Norris Trophy. And I'm not going to say I was surprised that Josi won the vote, but I was surprised at the margin at which he won. Again, this poll took place, 41 NHL writers taking place in this. Roman Josi receives 63.4% of the vote for the Norris Trophy. John Carlson of the Capitals at just 24.3% of the vote. How surprised were you that that was the margin of victory for Roman Josi in this poll?
I was a little surprised. And to give you the raw numbers, of course, as you mentioned, 41 of my colleagues, including myself, voted for these awards, and 26 of us out of the 41 voted for Roman Josi. Now, I honestly expected Roman to win the vote, but I didn't think it would be as decisive as it was. And we've talked about this at length. I think John Carlson had a phenomenal season offensively in terms of points. I mean, he had 75 points when the season paused. He was on pace for 89. The last two defensemen to have at least 89 points in a season were Ray Bourque and Sergei Zubov in the 1993-94 season. But John Carlson's play started to diminish a bit in the second half of the season, particularly after the All-Star break. And the Capitals, too, started struggling as a team. They were losing their grip on the Metropolitan Division, which it appeared they were running away with at one point earlier in the season. You know, my argument, and I did a separate article with my colleague who covers the Capitals, Tariq El-Bashir, and we had a little back and forth about it. My argument was is that Roman Josi is a more complete defenseman than John Carlson. Roman Josi, of course, is an elite offensive defenseman, and I think you can make the case that John Carlson is as well. But Roman, I believe, affects games in more ways than John Carlson. You know, the one thing that stood out to me, and I think the one thing that may ultimately force, may have ultimately swayed the vote in favor of Roman Josi, is that, you know, Roman still has a positive impact on the Predators defensively, while Carlson has a negative impact on the Capitals defensively. And the award is supposed to go to the defenseman who exhibits all-around ability. So while you can't take anything away from the amount of points that John Carlson has, the danger in doing that, though, and the danger in looking at points specifically is that you tend to ignore everything else. Now, 8 of the past 10 Norris Trophy winners have finished in either first or second in the league among defensemen in scoring. Now, if it's going to be John Carlson and Roman Josi, it's going to be 9 of 11 because Carlson is 1 and Josi is 2. But I just think that Roman Josi, you have to think of Roman Yossi's candidacy this year for the Norris Trophy almost as a Hart Trophy case. And that's the argument that I made, that without Roman Josi, the Predators would be, I can't even imagine how much worse the Predators would be this season if not for Roman Josi. When you consider the underperformance of so many of the Predators' top players, particularly the forwards, without Roman Josi, I don't even want to think of where this team would be. He has carried this team to the point where they were in a playoff spot, despite everything that's gone wrong for this group, at the time where the league went on hiatus. I think when you consider that factor, I think Roman should have the edge. The one thing that I would be concerned about if you were hoping for Roman Josi to win the Norris Trophy is I think the season being paused actually works to Carlson's advantage.
Yeah.
Because I think if Roman Josi would have carried the Predators into the playoffs and had a great stretch run over the past, you know, over the last month of the season, I think that would have cemented Josi as the clear favorite. But because we don't have that, I think Carlson may, for lack of a better term, escape with the Norris Trophy because of the amount of points that he has.
I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Let's say for the sake of this argument, I think this is probably a safe assumption to make. The NHL comes back, but there's not enough time to finish out the regular season, and you have to just go based off what we've seen so far in the regular season in terms of making your vote and making your awards. Does Roman Josi win the Norris Trophy and give the Nashville Predators finally a defenseman winning the Norris Trophy for the first time in the history of their franchise?
It's hard. It's really hard to say yes or no. But honestly, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to say no. And I think, and here's why. And they say this with due respect to all of my colleagues around the league. The Athletic, that we do have a large, you know, we have a large gathering of people, only represents a portion of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, which votes on several awards, including the Hart Trophy and the Norris Trophy. Unfortunately, a lot of my colleagues are dinosaurs. And I say that in the sense that they're going to see the points, and that's going to be it for John Carlson. I think there are going to be too many people, unfortunately, that are going to be swayed by John Carlson's point total and his pace to vote Roman Josi number one. I think the margin is going to be incredibly small. Like, I think it's going to be a toss-up, but I just don't have as much confidence and as many of my colleagues to look at this fully and just not see the points that John Carlson put up and give him the award. So I do think Roman Josi is going to put up a big fight, but unfortunately, I think John Carlson is going to win the award.
Another part of the poll that came out was the Hart Trophy results. Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers winning that award in the Athletic with 39% of the vote. Nathan MacKinnon in second with 31%, and then Artemi Panarin of the New York Rangers in third. No Connor McDavid in the top three. Obviously, the injury that he has, also his teammate in Leon Draisaitl, I think hurts him in that argument as well. I would have gone with Nathan MacKinnon as my vote. I think when you look at all the injuries the Avalanche have had this year, his ability to still put this team, that the Avalanche, in the position they're in right now, today, where the standings are, I think McKinnon has just been otherworldly good this year. And I know Draisaitl's got the point totals, and it's hard for me to argue against that when you look at 110 points through 71 games. I think would have gone with Nathan McKinnon from the Avalanche.
And I voted for Nathan McKinnon. He was my choice. And you look at just the seasons that he's had over the past two-plus seasons. In 17-18, 97 points. Last year, 99 points. And this year, he had 93 points through 69 games. So he was definitely going to cross the 100-point mark as long as he stayed healthy. And I agree with you, Robbie. When you consider the number of significant injuries that the Colorado Avalanche dealt with at certain points of the season, whether it was Mikko Rantanen or Gabriel Landeskog, Philip Grubauer, you know, many of their important players were out of the lineup, but Nathan McKinnon was unaffected by it. The Colorado Avalanche, still one of the better teams in the Western Conference. You know, we are fortunate to see Nathan McKinnon play 4 to 5 times a year because he is in the division with the Predators. And over the past few years, my eyes have been opened by just how incredible of a hockey player he is. So Leon Draisaitl, of course, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. Leon Draisaitl has the point total, and people are going to be swayed by the point total. But I think you have to look at the full picture. And Nathan McKinnon, how well he's played over the past few years, specifically how well he's played this year, and the fact that that line that he had with Landeskog and Rantanen, which was one of the best lines in the league over the past few years, very rarely being together this year because the two of them have been hurt significantly at various points. To me, it was a no-brainer to vote Nathan McKinnon as my MVP vote.
And then maybe the most eye-popping one, when you look at just like the sheer number of the vote, Connor Hellebuck of the Jets receives more than 92% of the vote for the Vezina Trophy, which is not necessarily surprising that he won. I am kind of surprised that he received more than 92% of the vote. You don't really see that happen very often in a vote like this.
No, and just for those who are listening, the general managers vote on the Vezina Trophy. That is not right. An award voted on by the media. But, you know, as it says in the explanation, he actually received two votes for the Hart Trophy as well. And I honestly think you can make a legitimate Hart Trophy case, an MVP case, for Connor Hellebuck when you look at his numbers. Because we talked about UC Saros, for example, being a significant reason why the Predators' record improved since John Hines became coach. If not for Connor Hellebuck, the Winnipeg Jets would not be in a playoff spot. Plain and simple. You think about the players that they traded, you know, Dustin Byfuglien not playing this year. Without him, that team would be nowhere near a playoff spot. You look at his numbers across the board, his traditional statistics, his fancy stats, he's among the best in the league. You know, without Connor Hellebuck, the Winnipeg Jets would not be where they are. So I think we talked about goaltenders being drafted in the first round. It's just as rare that goaltenders win the MVP. But I think Connor Hellebuck is a absolute no-brainer for the Vezina. If he can't win the MVP, he absolutely should win the Vezina. I think it's a no-brainer.
The Jets would just be sunk, and they would have been sunk all year without Hellebuck. So I agree there. Just some interesting stuff there. We'll see if the NHL season indeed is paused and doesn't come back, at least from the regular season point of view, whether or not Roman Josi has done enough to perhaps win the Norris Trophy and give the Predators their first Norris Trophy winner in the history of their franchise. We'll be back with more of Morning Drive next in hour two. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan from The Athletic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite spots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.